Welcome to Focus on Fuels, brought to you by StoneX. Your hosts are Trevor McClanahan, Risk Manager, and Alex Fodes, Director of Market Strategy from the StoneX Energy Desk. Alex and Trevor help fleet managers, fuel buyers, and energy procurement specialists gain control of fuel costs, boost margins, and keep their businesses competitive. Join them for another deep dive into the volatile energy markets.
Remember that the trading of derivatives such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Focus on Fuels. I'm your host, Alex Otis, and I'm here with Trevor McClanahan. How's it going, Trevor?
Not too bad. We've got Nathan Cowan coming in today. He's going to talk a little bit about propane, so we're excited to chat about that, but we're going to talk a little bit about just the overall view of energy right now, what's going on. So this week, we're recording this on March 26th. We're currently seeing crude, WTI crude, run into the round number resistance of $70, and it's so far rejected that. Heating oil has also found some resistance at $2.30. And it also rejected that. That's where the 200-day moving average, it actually sits at $2.30.59. So found some resistance there, but there's some support, short-term support there at 228. So we could see some range-bound diesel volatility here in the next couple weeks, next couple days, I should say, unless some sort of catalyst kind of breaks things out. What are you seeing, man?
Yeah, I think recently one thing I read was the Dallas Fed survey, which is given to essentially some of the larger producing companies and some of their executives fill out these surveys. One of the questions is, what's the price of a new well break-even? And that price was around $65 per barrel. And we've kind of talked about that a little bit. Our internal assessment of that was around $63 per barrel. Obviously, these surveys are not, for every single executive. So there could be some differences there. But regardless, it's right around that $63, $65 per barrel target. And I think that puts a price floor on the market for WTI. And we've kind of discussed that previously. And over the past few weeks, we've seen WTI prices not quite touch $65 per barrel. I think they were at 67, 66.
Yep.
But regardless, it touched that that floor area and then has been kind of rebounding since then. But now we're kind of hitting that resistance point. The most recent price action was upward with regards to an announcement that President Trump issued some more sanctions or tariffs. That's kind of his favorite thing to do. And recently it's been on buyers of Venezuelan crude. So the market's still kind of digesting whether that has any large supply demand effect on the market.
We are seeing some reports that India has already started to reduce the cargoes that they're buying from Venezuela. So some signs of reduction of purchases from Venezuela there. China and China, what's the other?
Egypt.
Yeah. Those are the two other. China's the major one, though. They're about 50%, 50 to 55% of the Venezuelan sold crude went to China. So China will probably, they could either continue that or they might just divert and go back to Russia to import some more from them.
Yeah. And honestly, one other buyer of Venezuelan crude has been U.S. companies. So we'll see how that waiver goes with Chevron.
That was about eight, just to put some numbers around that. Venezuela was exporting about 800,000 barrels per day. Is that
I believe that was crude and fuel oil.
Yeah, fuel oil combined. So 500,000, about around 500,000 of crude, and then about 300,000 fuel oil. So that's a pretty sizable amount though. And definitely will tighten that heavy crude market. That was already tight. And then, we got Canadian crude a little bit at harm now with the tariffs that Trump's threatening on there. But that's also a really strong source of heavy crude. So the market in general, the global market for heavy crudes is continuing to tighten, which those guys will be looking for buyers, and American refiners are the biggest consumers of that.
Mm-hmm. And I'd say a lot of this, you know, tariff talk is still kind of up in the air.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a lot of speculation at this point, but it is to say that would be bullish developments if those actually kind of take a bite out of supply. In kind of along the product side of things, we've seen some resilience by one of the heating fuels. Propane has been kind of holding up in a time period where we normally tend to see kind of this dip seasonally when some of the domestic demand falls off. And that's kind of why we brought on Nate Cowan. He is one of our colleagues, and he's kind of got more of a focus on propane as well. And so we brought him on to discuss kind of the ins and outs of that market and provide us a little bit more color. So thank you, Nate, for joining us today. It'll be good to kind of get your opinion on propane. First off, tell us about kind of what the propane market in general. You know, we discuss a lot more about crude and refined products, but kind of more the specifics regarding propane.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Well, I don't know if I'm an expert in propane, but I've watched plenty King of the Hill, so I can speak to that.
That works.
Yeah, so I came from the propane world, worked at a midstream company that specifically dealt with, you know, marketing propane and butane and other natural gas liquids from refineries, fractionators. They did a little bit of gathering and stuff too, but the big thing was like storing that, managing the risk around that, and then marketing that to retail outlets. So that's kind of the reason they brought me on here, talk about propane. But yeah, it's just, I guess, start really propane 101. It's just one of several different kind of niche products that come from the ground. Whenever you produce crude oil or natural gas, you get other things with it. So, you know, you get hydrogen, helium, things like that come out of the ground as well whenever you're drilling for those two main products, crude and natural gas. But ethane is a big one that is in that NGL or natural gas liquid group. Then second to that, there's propane, then there's butane, both normal butane and isobutane. Most people don't really know anything about butane. It has plenty of, you know, use cases, but it's more on the industrial side or more on the refining side. And then blending into gasoline. So that's where you get your big switch from cheaper winter grade gasoline, where they blend in really affordable butane. And then you also, you know, use butane in your lighters and your little torches and stuff. So that's kind of the only like use, I guess, us folk have with it.
Yeah, but I wouldn't think that'd be too much of a demand.
I don't think it's a big demand number. Yeah. No, I don't think the government reports on that much. But yeah, then you get like natural gasoline, which is really, it's just a really light crude grade, similar to like gasoline. And it's really used to dilute heavy crude oil that's coming down from Canada. It's also used in some other chemical applications and stuff.
But is that synonymous with condensate?
I think so.
Okay.
They're very similar. Yeah.
Okay. Because there's,
I think they can be used interchangeably.
All right. Because I know that Venezuelan crude heavier tends to need some blending of that as well. So
yeah, for sure. So yeah, I mean, the last 15 years, let's call it, probably since like 08, really, whenever shale took off, you know, you had a huge supply surge of crude oil, natural gas, and all these natural gas liquids. And for the longest time, like the market was so just steady eddy year to year. There's, you know, peaks and valleys in propane prices and propane stocks. And that was primarily driven from weather. How hard winter hit really dictated what that market was going to look like that winter, but also, you know, kind of going into the following winter. Now, since we have so much more propane to work with, it's really primarily been an export fuel. So the U.S. produces like close to, I think it's like 2.3 or 2.4.
I thought it was closer to 2.7.
Oh, it might be. Shoot, I gotta look at my numbers. But we, I think we, let me consult my charts really quick. Yeah, it's right around 2.7 million barrels a day. And that's propane and this other thing called propylene, which is coming off refineries. That's really used as a middle, I guess like a, it's used strictly in like petrochemical applications.
That's a feedstock. Right?
Yeah, feedstock, precursor, that's the word I was looking for, to propylene and polypropylene, which is something, you know, you touch every single day. So the EIA reports both of those, and that's where you kind of get that 2.7 number. I think it's probably closer to like 2.4 for just propane alone. But the U.S. only uses, I think it's like roughly like field production of propane, I think is right around like 2.25 million barrels a day coming from the field, and then you have about 300 coming off refineries. So... yeah, it's, and we're only domestically consuming, I think it's like in the 800, 850 range a year, 1,000 barrels a day of propane. So, I mean, you have a ton of excess supply, and it's got to find its home somewhere, right? Like every single commodity market has to balance supply demand eventually. They can be out of whack in the short term, but they eventually have to, you know, balance itself out. So it does that by... we export all that supply overseas. Primary markets where it ends up is China, mostly. South Korea, Japan, Indonesia, India, a lot of those Asian countries we export, you know, pretty much all over the world, just to a much lower extent. But those, India, China, like those two alone are probably the primary source of demand growth in the world. And they've been able to basically take in all of that excess supply and the growing excess supply every single year for the last like 5 years or so. They've really ramped up their demand. And that's partially in India for the longest time. It was subsidized by their government as a cleaner fuel for their residential, you know, demand. So they were burning like peat, like... you know,
wood
coal,
pellets,
dung, like things like terrible stuff to like consume. Like talk about, you know, particulates in the air and everything. Like it's horrible to breathe in the you know, smoke and everything from
especially that densely of a populated region.
Yeah, so it's no good.
I would say that also just kind of a sidebar here is that, you know, people that tend to suggest that demand for petroleum is, you know, reaching its peak. It's interesting to note like how far certain economies still have to go. So, you know, they're progressing from that and actually moving from something that was not in the petroleum sector towards the petroleum sector. I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. No, I mean, energy is energy. So it helps build your economy. It helps raise the, you know, GDP of like everyone. The more you can consume, the more you can do, right? As far as energy. So this is a much cleaner fuel to burn for houses, better health outcomes for those families and kids. But then, so the government subsidized it in India for the longest time. And then China built out a huge like suite of propane dehydrogenation units. All that means is they take propane, they convert it to propylene, then they take that and they start, you know, producing polypropylene, all that.
Which ultimately turns into plastics.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So China's producing plastics, like it's coming out their ears. Like it's a huge exporter for them. So yeah, I guess long story short, propane's grown tremendously in the U.S. just because we have an abundance of natural gas and those liquids that come with it. And we found markets, you know, one way or another. But the tough thing with that is the pricing for propane just gets whipsawed by crude oil, by naphtha, by all these other globally traded, you know, benchmark instruments. And instead of it being like a primarily weather-driven market, now it's like a very geopolitical, very crude driven market.
Would you say it's closely or more closely related to crude oil pricing or natural gas pricing, or is that kind of just dependent upon the season that, in which it's
there? Yeah, crude oil, definitely. There's some elements where, or sometimes, I guess, when natural gas can affect the propane market kind of directly. I thought when I came into the business, like, oh, for sure, like natural gas and propane, they're basically the same thing. Like mm-hmm. they have to price pretty close to one another. The correlation is horrible. If you use natural gas to like hedge your propane, you'd be totally lost. So it correlates pretty closely with propane or with crude oil. And that's mostly because of that international demand. You get a little bit of feedstock switching in those blending pools for ethylene production and other petrochemicals. So they can use a number of things. They can use naphtha, which is very tightly correlated with crude pricing, to produce ethylene, propylene, all those other petrochemical feedstocks. And then, I guess if naphtha's like running up, people aren't going to consume that as much. So they're going to start buying up propane. So then you start seeing propane prices start drifting higher. And that's just kind of the switching effect and that incremental demand like pick up whenever, you know, one of those competing feedstocks becomes less profitable to use.
So would you say this market, like recently, I guess we saw kind of those last pushes of heating demand in the U.S. specifically. Would you say more of the recent price action is due to that, or is it due to inventories, or is it related to more kind of the plastics market, petrochemical market abroad? Or what are kind of the factors that are driving it recently?
I think this winter was mostly, it's kind of like the baseline for that export demand has just been gradually increasing like year after year after year. So it always kind of keeps the propane market in the U.S. a little more, I guess, a little tighter than it otherwise would be. And going into this winter, we had, you know, pretty good inventories, I think, heading into the winter. But then you got really strong weather demand. And it was in, you know, it was in those markets that, like, really run whenever the market gets tight, Conway mostly. So you saw the Midwest Conway price just soar during those cold snaps in January and February. And then, you know, Bellevue recently, which is on the Gulf Coast, that's really close to where we export our propane overseas. We've seen that run up just the last like week and a half or so. And I think that's mostly due to some hiccups in some of the fractionators down there. But that just means less supply is getting to market and they were expecting that production and, you know, selling based off that anticipated production, now have to go scramble and find other barrels to source from. So
kind of has a short squeeze effect.
Yep, exactly.
Do you think, so backing up a little bit, this tends to be the time that we start to see kind of prices falling off? I mean, I know you've made a point of that export demand has become kind of a larger factor than what we're domestically demanding. Is this normally the time that you start to see prices go lower? And if you are, I guess, an end user, kind of what's the strategy here? And kind of what would you recommend from kind of a strategy regarding propane hedging products specifically? Because, I mean, that's what we're all here to do ultimately. Would you kind of talk a little bit about kind of the strategy there and then pricing of, you know, what time of the year you typically look at? And is this year kind of counter to different years?
Yeah, that's a good question. If I could answer that really well, that's the $1 billion question.
Yeah.
But so I guess we're ending this winter with like, I think we're at like 43 million barrels right now. Typically like 40 million barrels is kind of like the floor. And anytime we get below that, like things get a little weird. So you could see prices spike. You could, you know, people kind of start scrambling. They're worried about that supply kind of getting too low. We're probably going to end the winter right around here. We'll probably start building in the next few weeks. So I'm not too worried about us dipping below that 40 million barrel threshold. But I think the same rules apply as far as hedging goes. Like you can kind of stick to the tried and true contracting and hedging that you've done in the past. The good thing about market, right, energy market period, is that the price today does not mean it's the same as the price tomorrow or next winter. So while prices have run up in the spot month, like the front month here, physically, the prices for next winter are actually cheaper. So, you know, despite the run up here, there's still plenty of benefits by locking in a lower price for next winter compared to today. So that's one good thing, I would say. But just the basic principle of like why propane marketers go out there and lock in their you know, expected price or whatever for next winter. And, you know, you can lock up prices up to like 3 years out in some cases, is they just want to protect their customer base. Like they want to protect them from that price volatility. And again, the prices out there a year, 2, 3 years out don't move nearly as fast as they do in the front month. And no one has any idea what's going to happen in a year, 2 years, let alone 3 years. But the propane, you know, propane can be traded out there and it's totally fine. It's totally normal for that to happen. And, you know, you're locking in prices right now that are actually like pretty close to historical averages, I would say. You're also locking in prices that are based on crude oil being in like the mid to upper 60s out there on deferred contracts. So, you know, again, I don't know what's going to happen with crude, but since we've talked about crude pricing correlating really closely with propane pricing, anytime you can lock in something that's kind of a crude based or dictated on crude pricing, anytime you can lock in something like that based on a crude kind of tie, or yeah, I guess the tide being in the mid 60s a barrel, seems like a pretty good deal.
Yeah, going back to Alex's point on the wells being new wells being drilled at $65 a barrel, we've made that point on this podcast multiple times. So there's strong support there, and sounds like you're tying that kind of towards propane as well.
Yeah, and you know, we've just 2 years ago saw crude oil run to $115 a barrel. So, you know, we just don't know what's going to happen. So if you can lock in like pretty average or maybe even a little bit below average pricing for your customers, you're doing them a favor, in my opinion. You're reducing the surprise price spike that you would have to pass on to them if you weren't to hedge. So yeah, you're really protecting your customers. And everyone kind of does it. So it works because everyone does it. Mm-hmm. Those buyers go out there, they lock in those prices, and that allows them to set price kind of assurance for their customers for a year, 2 years, 3 years out. And, you know, they don't have to worry about their customer getting ticked off that your price sucks and I'm going to go to your competitor. Because they locked it in for me, basically. Like they're not moving their price, but you just moved mine 30, 40 cents higher. Which, you know, when you're filling up a 500,000 gallon tank or whatever it is, that adds up.
Yep.
Right. So
I think it's important to note too, just the fact that in the wintertime, sorry to interrupt you there. Yeah. In the middle of wintertime, you know, propane doesn't tend to have these like really dramatic downward spikes. I mean, it has those obviously, but it's typically a slower leak, and it doesn't really have like dramatic sell-offs unless there's just a huge sell-off in crude. But if there's a huge cold spike that lasts for a long period of time, the propane market gets super antsy, and it seems like it just runs up and get above a dollar pretty quickly. And now that's when the consumers and the retail side of the business really start to kind of panic. And point of this is just the fact that you can protect your consumers from that.
I also would think this year, overall, it was, you know, contrary to our, you know, 3 weeks of sub-zero degrees weather here in Kansas City, overall across the U.S., the heating degree days, I believe, were actually down from historical averages. So even with, you know, you can be a warmer December, warmer November, and all it takes is one or two of those cold snaps before you see some price spikes. But that's just to say, I mean, and I commend you for not coming in here and pretending like you're a weatherman and telling me about La Nina or El Nino this upcoming winter. But and I guess the gist of it is that you never really know what's going to happen. But kind of trying to price off of historical averages, what's kind of a ratio or factor that you like to look at when you're analyzing propane markets? Is it pricing ratios? Is it inventories? Or what kind of helps you make those decisions?
Good question. You know, I guess I go back to the crude. So if we have crude trading around like that 65 to 75, that's probably like a Goldilocks zone of sorts. Anytime we get north of that, maybe sit tight, like sit on your hands, wait, see if it can pull back. And then if propane's trading about 40% of WTI, so I don't know what that equates to, and like, let's call it $70 a barrel for WTI, that probably, let me just do the math really quick, because
it'd be like
upper 60s. Yeah, it's like upper 60s cents per gallon. You might not get that for most of this winter, for like the winter strip, because it does typically go north of 40% WTI in the winter. So even if you can lock in like low 70s, that seems to be pretty solid. I mean, the risk of it just falling out of bed, like it went to like 30 cents or something during COVID, but like if you're waiting for that to happen, like, yeah, you know,
right,
good luck.
You're in the wrong market.
Yeah, you're in the wrong market. You're never going to hedge. Yeah. Like, let's not talk. But I think, yeah, I think targeting like the mid to lower 70s is a totally reasonable level to start locking in. And if it gets below that, like 65 cents, like,
dude,
jump on that. Because the downside risk is much less than the upside risk. Like what we saw this past winter, you know, it went up to a dollar a gallon several days. I think it averaged like over 90 cents, 90, probably closer to 95 cents there for like January or something like that. And it doesn't take much for it to do that. Like Trevor was saying, you know, you get one, or I guess you were saying too, like heating degree days over the whole winter weren't that crazy. But there were a few winter storms where, you know, people were really like burning a bunch of propane, and it was causing prices to run up.
Yeah, we've seen an 8 million barrel draw on propane in a week.
Something like that.
Maybe that was a little bit of data fudging there. But still, that caused a panic, and I know that the market responded and spiked pretty quickly.
Yeah, and another thing you get in the winter is like, not only do you get strong demand, but you get the risk of supply like basically freezing up. So we call it freeze offs. It happens for crude oil, natural gas, and like, you know, it happens for those, it happens for everything else. So propane production starts falling off whenever things get really, really cold. We actually didn't get those freeze offs nearly as much this year as we had, I guess, was it last year or the year before?
2021 or 2. Yeah.
2022.
Yeah, the Texas deep freeze.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we see them in the Bakken and North Dakota quite often.
And you don't get quite as much of your propane production out of the Bakken as you do in the Permian. So whenever freeze-offs hit the Permian, you really are going to feel it. Mm-hmm. Like, production's going to plummet. In 22, if that was it, like, you saw production just, like, rip lower, like several hundred thousand barrels a day lower in just a matter of days. And those wells took like probably closer to 3 months to like get back to normal production levels, like pre-freeze off. So it's not, it's like a one-time event. It might only last for a few days. And that alone is kind of concerning on the supply side, which can drive prices up. But it definitely cannibalizes a lot of that demand for, you know, weeks or months.
Yeah, and I think in propane, the black swan events almost happen a little bit more often because, you know, it is weather, right? And it's so much more unpredictable than various other markets that, you know, shift things.
Yeah.
I have one more thing that I'd like to add and just to ask you about. We talked about the percentage of propane to crude and how we value that and see that as a good measure to look into when to lock in. We know that there's some export capacity that's expected to increase down in the Houston region. What does that look like? And does that move then change the target at least for that percentage of propane to propane to crude? Does it change that target that we're looking for?
I don't think it really changes the target. I think it just further validates that it is going to trade more based on crude in the future. Because again, that means the amount of propane that is out there in the market, like the relative percent of the propane market, is going to be more of that U.S. export to the world, right? Mm-hmm. And then at that point in time, you're talking about competing against other things, like competing against naphtha, competing against, other petrochemical feedstocks. And so it just means that crude or that propane barrel is going to be priced more competitively with the crude market. So yeah, I think that 40% WTI, if you can get there or a little bit below that, great. And I think that's going to hold even tighter in the future.
Do you think there's even maybe a breaking point for crude or for propane? If it gets above a dollar, then we're just going to start looking for other sources of heating fuel. So maybe that even means there's some sort of lid on propane prices.
Could be. You're still like,
if it's barring there's some sort of weather event.
Yeah. In the short term, no.
Right.
I don't think there really is a lid. Like we've seen propane, it was like before I even entered the market, I think it was trading like well over $2 a gallon for, a brief stint. And that's not good because like, I think people were legitimately like switching to like just burning wood in their like stoves and stuff to avoid having to pay for that. So there's a little bit of short term switching where you can substitute stuff out. But in the long run, like you want that market to like maintain its integrity and like be reliable. Mm-hmm. So, there's still plenty of like petrochemical applications that are going to use that barrel regardless. And it doesn't matter if it's a dollar a gallon, if they're still making money at that or $1.50 a gallon, then they'll keep using it. It really just depends on what those competing feedstocks and everything are priced. So as long as propane doesn't run, like, let me check out my chart and see kind of relative value. I think it got all the way up to like 70% of WTI in 2021.
Yep.
And it most recently has been in the mid to upper 50s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, recently. Okay. Like
and that's with
month.
Extremely low inventories, as you pointed out before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The last couple of months, it's been north of 50%. But for most of 24, it was hovering in the low 40% range. It spiked last winter, just kind of right at 50%. And then heading in, like most of 2023, it was trading in the mid 30% of WTI. So we had plenty of people locking in really long dated stuff there. And crude was still kind of running all over the place in 23. So, I don't necessarily think there's a ceiling on propane. It just really comes down to like what's WTI and what are the other refined products trading at.
Right. Okay. So unless you have anything to add, to summarize, your price targets for propane, mid-70s, that's a good place to lock in. That's where guys should really target and, you know, watch the crude market as well heavily.
Yeah. And I'd target mid lower 70s. Anytime you're dipping below 70, like just keep buying. Like that's the beauty of it and kind of the tried and true like hedging strategy is stick to the plan. Like don't abandon it. If things are just totally out of whack, if propane's way high as a percent of WTI, maybe hold off a little bit, maybe delay some of those purchases. But I think buying like once a week, every other week, you know, during that kind of regular contracting period, like April through by June, July, that's a totally fine strategy. And you don't have to contract everything. Maybe you contract 60, 70% kind of by the end of summer. And then you opportunistically like buy any dips that come after that. Or, you know, you get close to the next winter and you still have like 20% of your, 25% of your program unhedged. Look at buying like call options or something. They're pretty cheap. Again, propane doesn't run a whole lot until you get into those winter months where it really can run. So I think we saw the propane market run like at least 20 cents higher, if not more, in, let's see, we were trading right around like just below 70, honestly, like 65 cents. And it ran all the way up to like well north of 90 cents. Mm-hmm. And a propane call option is typically around like 6 cents or so for like 4 months of coverage.
Yeah, maybe. Late in the season, especially like you said, in the fall, you're reducing your premium cost on that, obviously from time value. So that's really when
You're looking at short-term protection, right? You're not paying for insurance that's a year out. So a lot can happen. It's going to be a lot more expensive if you're buying insurance way out like that. That call option or cap or whatever you want to call it is really good, like short-term hedge for, and it really comes in nice during those months where the likelihood of that actually settling in the money goes way up.
Yeah. September, October is that's kind of your target months as far as to bring options in the equation.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool.
So yeah, stick to the plan, guys.
Well, I think that about wraps up as much as we can possibly talk about propane.
I didn't even get to my King of the Hill stuff.
Yeah. Come on. We really appreciate you coming on, Nate. And I'd also like to point out the fact that Nate puts on hedge schools, I would say quarterly or maybe even a little bit more
like twice
often
a year,
than that.
Roughly.
So do keep an eye on those. You can always reach out to us for more information regarding that. But we thank him for coming on, and he's a wealth of knowledge, specifically in the propane space, but a little bit more outside of there as well, too. So we thank you all for joining us this week. I think our next episode will be in a few weeks, and we may have another guest to discuss kind of the impact of tariffs in it and what it might have on the market.
Especially on that northern border.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks, guys, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Focus on Fuels podcast with Trevor McClanahan and Alex Hose, brought to you by StoneX, NASDAQ ticker SNEX, a global Fortune 100 financial services company with a century of commodities risk management experience. Subscribe to Focus on Fuels on your preferred podcasting platform. For insights on managing fuel and energy price volatility, and to sign up for the free StoneX Morning Energy Brief newsletter, email focusonfuels@stonex.com or visit www.stonex.com. Please feel free to rate, review, and share this episode with colleagues. Until next time.